faith in the news media has been challenged, making it even harder to get stories told. The Friday Reporter podcast was created to help audiences better understand the media by hosting journalists who will answer the questions to which we need answers. Join me every Friday to hear more. Well, hi again, and thanks so much for joining me for another episode of the Friday Reporter podcast. I don't know who's more excited to have this conversation today. I am joined today by a friend that I have known since we were puppies when we started this communications game. And now the famous and fabulous Rich Zeoli from 1210 WPST, who has his own show, who's doing amazing things in the Philadelphia market. Rich Zeoli, thank you so much for being with me today.
Oh, Lisa, it's so great to see you again, my friend, and talk to you, and am honored to be a guest on your podcast. So thank you for having me.
Well, it's a huge treat for me, and I am so excited to talk about this show that you are doing, because it's a radio show, it's a podcast, it's everywhere. Your followers are like, they are with you, they love the work you do. I got to start, though. I mean, let's go back a little bit. We started as kids in the governor's office way back when in New Jersey, but tell me about Rich Zeoli before then. Like, how did you get started? Like, who talked you into doing communications for a living?
Well, I mean, you in a lot of ways. And we talked about it a lot back in our days in Trenton in the governor's office and driving around with Governor DeFrancesco and going to all these events. And then remember, I mean, after 9/11, we had that huge survivors hero ceremony in Jersey City that we helped organize together.
Yeah.
And, you know, I ran comms on that with you and we did a lot of that stuff together. And I remember one day you and I talking about we should be doing more communication stuff. Mm-hmm. And as the years went on, it just was such a natural fit, combining politics and communications and then what we learned in politics. Because, I mean, let's face it, Jersey politics, you cut your teeth. It's a sport. I mean, that's for sure.
It's a boot camp.
You learn a lot, and then you can help people in the private sector with those ideas as well. But I always felt a calling to have a show, and I wanted to have a show. I just had no idea how to break into radio. But it's like anything else in life. When you want something and you think about it enough and somehow it comes to fruition, just somehow somebody comes into your life who can help you make it happen. And that's what happened with me.
Well, that's that good old fashioned Jersey hustle too. I mean, that definitely does a lot. But true. You've written a book about communications too, right? I mean, you wrote a book that like was long before I was ever doing media training and doing all those things. You wrote something that's really, to me, a very good guide to people. Tell me a little bit about the book and how that all came together for you.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. So the 7 principles of public speaking, proven methods from a PR pro. I was just giving a lot of speeches. I mean, I was out there doing a lot and helping people figure out how to give their messages. And I thought, all right, let's write it down in a book form, make it easy to understand. It was writing a book was such a pain. Like my wife's always telling me, I got to write another one. But it was just such a labor of love. Late nights writing it, lots of coffee, lots of Red Bull. But I'm glad I did it. And it's something I recommend everybody should do. You got to write one, Lisa. When's your book coming out?
I have like 4 drafts started and none of them finished for that same reason, because I know that it's going to be, Red Bull. See, maybe that's what I'm missing. I'm missing the Red Bull. I have a couple
Red
of ideas.
The author's gift. You know what I mean? It'll help.
You're one of a dozen, maybe more, friends of mine that I've talked to that have written books, and everybody tells me a different story. Some have been journalists and their work has informed the book, right? So a lot of the stories that they've written then ended up being what they put together as part of that work. But yours is a very different model and more of the model like I have in mind for something that I'd like to do myself, but about the lessons and the things you've learned and the things you've watched. I mean, nobody teaches you more about public speaking and how to be good at what we do than watching a principal over and over again not be great at it, right? I mean, you just see the contours of like what needs to change and how it needs to work. And back then when you and I were traveling in the car with a governor and watching these speeches that he would give and legislators would give, and I mean, God, I remember being, you might have even been on the team in Atlantic City when Donald Trump was on the escalator with us up to go give speeches. There are so many different models and so many different ways that people do it, but there really are some fundamentals that are so important. I'm so proud of the book that you've written, and I'm going to put it in the show notes and make sure that everybody that's listening in can find it, because I think it's a great guide and it really can help just about anybody figure out how to be a better public speaker. So then after you leave the governor's office, you were doing some small bits of radio, the right? This. So tell me a little bit about your journey to where you are today on radio, because it's yeah. awesome. I've watched it from afar, and now I want it because I don't know how you do a 4-hour show. I'm like, the stamina is amazing. Good for you. How did it go? How did it get started?
Well, let's go back to the governor's office for a second. I was the director of the Office of TV and Radio,
right.
and Governor DeFrancesco would come in and do his weekly radio addresses.
Right.
So somebody would write him, and he'd come in, and I would do the recording for him. And a few times during that, I would say to him, like, hey, did you think about maybe saying it this way or maybe emphasizing this? And he, you know, he was always so good about taking feedback. He really was. He was such a humble guy in that regard. So he would say, yeah, it's a good idea. Let me try that. Or I'd say, you know, why don't you weave in a story about this or something? And I enjoyed doing it. That was a lot of fun. And it kind of gave me the confidence then to start doing it for other people, congressional candidates and candidates running for governor and president and U.S. Senate. And it just became a kind of thing where when you are good at something and people bring you in, I used to worry, you know, I guess a little bit of imposter syndrome, like, why am I an expert? Why would they listen to me? And I'm sure people that do this for a living early on, especially in their career, probably feel that way. But if you're good at something and people want to listen to you and take your advice, really the only question is, do you click? They will always accept your expertise. They will always accept that you have something to offer them.
That's right.
Just a matter of if your personalities click, and then figuring out how to understand their voice. And that's always a key thing too. And you know this very, very well, Lisa, figuring out their voice and their style and how they want to communicate, not trying to change them, but trying to help them achieve their best is always key, because nobody can really change as a communicator, but they can improve, they can get better, they can find their own voice. And just helping them on that journey. I mean, it's kind of like the physician heal thyself in some ways. The person who comes to you for media training or public speaking training, they have to do it on their own. But you can really help guide them by just figuring out how they can overcome their fear, overcome whatever sense of intimidation they have, and then speak naturally and speak from the heart. And to stop trying to sound like somebody, you know, just don't sound like a candidate running for governor. Don't sound like somebody who's a CEO. Just be yourself and sound like yourself and be authentic. And sometimes with very successful people, teaching that sense of authenticity becomes the most challenging part of it, you know, because they've always had to kind of put on an act around people their entire career. But as a communicator, you have to be natural, you have to be real, and you have to connect with audiences.
Right.
And I was doing more and more of that. And I thought, well, I would love to talk about this more. So after I wrote my book, I started to do some media hits, and I was doing interviews and telling people on radio shows and TV shows. But I ran into a buddy of mine who's now actually the CEO of Cooper Hospital in Camden, Dr. Anthony Mazzarelli. He was an intern back in the day on our station, WPHT, for Michael Smirkanish. And then he was in medical school, he started hosting a radio show on our station. He was the night guy, and then he was the weekend guy. And he and I actually ran against each other for governor of Jersey Boy State back in the early 90s. We became friends, but we lost touch. And then this is what I say, you know, if you want something and you believe in something and you're destined to do it, somehow somebody will come into your life and will help you make it happen. So I wanted into radio. I used to sit in my room and try to do monologues. I could maybe make it 7-8 minutes until I ran out of gas back then. I just didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
But I wanted it. And then all of a sudden he came back into my life. He saw that I was quoted in the New York Times about something I said regarding my book. And I think it was about one of Obama's speeches or something. Uh-huh. And he reached out to me. I was a guest on his radio show. We reconnected in Trenton one day over lunch. And then he said, start coming on my show and being my political guy, my Jersey guy.
I love
and that. Then let's get you some fill-in work. And that's how it started. And it spent years of doing whatever fill-in work I could do, whether it was New Jersey 101.5, our station, WABC in New York, nights, weekends, holidays, Thanksgiving night, Christmas morning, whatever it was, whatever they would give me, I would do it.
You have to say yes,
and
right?
That's what you got to do.
That's the thing I want to say. Just to pause for a second, because I want to make an emphasis on that. That is the one thing, Rich, that I say to every client that says they want to do TV. You have to say yes over and over and over again. Be available. I mean, Saturday afternoon, say yes, right? Thursday morning, say yes. You have to in order to continue to get asked. And also because then you're honing your craft, right? You're getting better at it too, because every opportunity you get to be in a small market at a different time and when maybe nobody's listening, that's when you're getting better and better too.
Mm-hmm. That's such great advice. You're exactly right. And even a couple of weeks ago, I was on vacation with my family all the way down in Cape Charles, Virginia. But I got an opportunity to do Fox Business, so I drove up. It was a 6-hour drive for a 30-minute hit. but I did it. I left the vacation. I left, and my wife understood and the kids understood because it's what you just have to do.
That's right.
And, you know, eventually there's a point in your life when you can probably take a deep breath and relax. I don't know if there ever is, though, because there's so many people that want to do what you're doing.
That's
so
right.
Yeah. You always got to stay on your toes, right?
Yeah. And so now, so the show, it's, so you had a show in the morning, is that right? So this is, okay, so tell me a little bit about that. Like, how did that evolution change to being a 4-hour afternoon show?
When I first got my full-time gig on 1210, it was back in the afternoons, actually. It was 2014.
Okay.
And I was the afternoon drive host. And then in about 2019, the morning show host at the time left our station and they came to me and they said, would you like to do mornings? And I said, I don't know. I mean, I guess, but they said, well, mornings is everything in radio. You know, it's the prime time slot and you got to do it and you really should do it. So I said, okay, fine. I did it, but I didn't enjoy it as much as I thought I would. And it wasn't just the getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning part of it. It was that in what I do, which is really political talk, and I love the breaking news aspect of talk radio and reacting to it and taking things live on the air, you know, White House press conferences and speeches and that sort of thing. And the mornings didn't really give me the opportunity to do that. And so when the opportunity came up to go back to afternoons, I said, I would like to do that. It just fits in better with the kind of radio I want to do, which is reacting to things as they come out. I don't like to talk about things that everybody's already talked about. I like to get the first crack at it.
I love that.
And so being back on in afternoons from 3 to 7 p.m. where honestly, every day, you know, we prep for a show. The prep starts the day right after the show ends the night before. We prep all day, but then by 3 o'clock, it usually goes right out the window because something has broken and something has changed. And for me, that's where I really get my adrenaline going and I can be fired up and react to it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can tell. I listened just yesterday to a couple of pieces that you had done about the debt ceiling and about some of the other sort of breaking news pieces. I loved your point of view. I love the way that you sort of dissect it in a way that I think is thoughtful. And I also love that it's not every other regurgitation of what I'm hearing on all of the tube, right? There are some shows that do it better than others, but there are a lot that repeat one another. I spent some time on my way in yesterday to listen to some of the networks as I was going. I was actually going to do a TV hit myself. And I listened to a couple of the networks to hear what they were talking about. And Rich, one channel to the next, and these are all the brand names that you would recognize, three-letter broadcasts, the same conversation about the same thing, and it's not interesting. What I love is that you unpacked it. I mean, you were talking about why the debt ceiling matters, the fact that the thing has been around since long before any of us were walking on this planet, and it'll be around and bigger, by the way, long after we're gone. So I love that. And I love that you sort of figured out a way to talk about it in a way that makes good sense to the people that are listening to you. What do you find? The thing that I think that is hard enough about radio, and you take callers, you have a lot of conversations. That to me is like, you're really getting into the fabric of where people are and what they're feeling like. How is that? Like, what is that like to, how many people are you working with, by the way? Is it just Rich, or do you have partners that you work with on the show? Are there other folks that are taking calls? Tell me about the format first.
Sure. Yeah. So I have two producers. Matt DeSantis is my executive producer, and no relation to Ron DeSantis, by the way.
I was going to ask.
And Henry Machette is our associate producer. Okay. So they help me put the show together.
Great.
And I talk to them on the air. I bring them into conversation sometimes, mm-hmm. make jokes with them. Matt's a very good straight man. And he's got a great laugh. Awesome. So that's always helpful. I do take callers. We try to get guests on. I got a couple guests on today. Mm-hmm. So I try to always vary the show a lot. But what I love about radio, even more than TV, is that radio is such an intimate form of communication.
Great.
When I'm talking to somebody, and this is, I think, one of the greatest rules of communication, we tend to think of communication and media as being mass media, as if everybody's listening at the same time, you know, as if we're all in a stadium looking up to a giant bullhorn or something that's transmitting the end of the world details for us. But truly, we listen as a one-on-one intimate experience every time. And with radio, somebody's in their car, they're listening to a podcast, they're listening to your podcast, Lisa, they're walking, and figuring out that being able to talk directly to an individual and have a one-on-one conversation with them, even though there's no feedback loop, is the trickiest part of this. But if you can do it, you'll create a relationship with the listener that is really unbreakable.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And I think sometimes with TV, it's very obvious that you're talking to the camera, and it's easy to forget that there's somebody on the other side of that camera watching you. And even if they're watching with five people, it's still, they're watching as an individual. Everybody yeah. listens and absorbs and watches as an individual. And a lot of times people make mistakes, especially I listen to some of the nationally syndicated radio guys, and they'll use words like, "Hey, folks, listen up," or "all of you out there," and "hello, America." And it's like, America's not listening. An individual is listening.
That's so interesting.
One at a time. Connect with them directly and you'll have a good experience.
I really like that too, because I do feel like that falls flat when they say things like, "hello, America," or "you guys out there." It feels like it falls flat. And that's actually very good counsel. I think that that's good for other people to think about, that it is a one-on-one conversation, even though, because everybody's listening themselves and digesting it in a way that's really, you know, personal to them. That's terrific advice. I mean, 4 hours, Rich, that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot to go. And it's good because it seems to me like you have a nice cadence where you sort of, you chunk it out on different topics too, right? So tell me a little bit about your process. Like, even though I know you have a show meeting the day before and then breaking news happens and the whole script changes, how do you guys think about the formatting for 4 hours of content?
Well, you think about it in the sense of, people are coming into the show at different times. At least that used to be the model of radio,
yeah.
where people would get in their car and they listen in chunks. But with talk radio, it's different. Mm-hmm. Our listeners tend to have the highest TSL, time spent listening. They'll average sometimes 90 minutes where they're listened completely through. My show is unique in that when the show is over, we podcast the entire show. And since I went from mornings to afternoons, which was October 3rd, to January, we had a million downloads for the podcast of the show. So people are listening to the whole show and they want to hear the entire journey and the entire process. So the question is, how do you do topics more than once and keep it fresh and interesting for the people that are listening for the entire 4 hours? Because people do.
Yeah.
And also deal with the fact that maybe somebody's jumping in their car at 5 o'clock and they're getting out of work, or 6 o'clock, or they're home because they're not driving to work anymore and they're listening on a podcast, but they're jumping on when they can. And to not forget the fact that they haven't heard the stuff you've already done. That's always the balance. Some days we get it right, some days we don't. But that's always the question of, can we balance those two competing interests, those who are listening for the entire show mm-hmm. and also people that are jumping in and want to hear the news of the day, even though I already covered it at 3 o'clock, but it's 5 o'clock now and they didn't hear it at 3 o'clock. The good news is, as technology changes, it makes it easier. So, for example, Odyssey, which is my parent company, mm-hmm. has the Odyssey app, and it's free and you can download it and you can rewind the show. You can pause it. And you can listen when you like, and that makes it easier. Certainly with podcasting, that also makes it easier. So if you're not particularly into a particular segment, you could skip forward. But that is always the challenge. It's, how do I keep you engaged for all 4 hours and then through a commercial break, right? Because at the end of the day, I've got to make money for my station and my advertisers, my sponsors. Yeah. I'm not very good at my job. So how can I keep you listening through the commercial break?
Right.
Luckily with talk radio, people do. And they're loyal, so they believe in what I say. They trust me. So if I give them a recommendation for something, they'll do it.
I have to mention Rich when I walk into the dealership. I know that. I mean, that I know that from yesterday. But I love the way, I love the breaking down of the different segments, how you did that and how you guys make it relevant. Because yesterday when I went through, I was like, okay, so I want to get smart. I haven't talked to Rich in a minute. I don't live in Philly and I don't typically, you know, listen to drive time radio. So I want to hear what he's talking about. I want to hear the show and I want to get a sense of it. And I did. I definitely clicked on, like, so the hot topic, of course, your listeners care most about this. So does everybody else in Washington. The big intrigue is the debt ceiling, which is why I clicked on what was, you know, what happened yesterday with McCarthy and with all of the machinations on that particular topic. And I loved it. I thought it really flows great. And it's a 47 minute segment, so that even if I, so at least I know in advance, like, okay, I've got about 45 minutes to listen and I'll check this out. I love that too. I love the way you guys are doing that. You're making it digestible for your listeners. So even if they're not in the car and listening, they can download the Odyssey app and get a sense of that. I listened on Apple Podcasts, but it's just about anywhere you can get a podcast, you can listen to the Rich Zeoli Show.
And it's great, right? Lisa, the fact that we can be on multiple platforms and people can listen on their schedule whenever they want, it's been a game changer for us.
And the thing too is like the one thing we talk about in communications all the time is to meet your audiences where they are, right? Find them, make it convenient so that they can hear you and hear what you're doing. I think that it's great. You guys are doing a great job. And I can't wait to listen more now that I know how to find you, my friend. I'm going to be listening because, well, you know, and I also too, as much as you and I don't always agree on topics, you definitely have this a similar point of view from being a communicator about how things are working and what's happening. So we have a couple more minutes and I want to ask you about your point of view on how things are going overall. And this is not a it's not as much politics as it is from a communications point of view, but how do you feel? I mean, so much of the conversation has been about who it'll be in 24 and what's going to happen, and you know, many of the questions I've been getting this week and I've been talking about is sort of the DeSantis versus Trump question, right? And this is not about preference. It's more about your point of view. But this week alone, and this episode will air after the fact, and maybe by then things will have changed. But this week, Governor DeSantis was in Washington, D.C. and seems to have come out in a way, and not come out because he really hasn't been to the camera at all, but his entry into the conversation seems to have gone not quite the way folks would have expected. What's your point of view on that?
From a communications perspective, it's been interesting to watch this unfold. I saw Governor DeSantis speak at the Union League in Philadelphia a couple months ago, and the crowd loved him. There were 700 people there. He got a bunch of standing ovations. I thought he did a very good job. Obviously, Trump is going after him very personally. He's trying to not engage back with Trump, and probably because he can't out-Trump Trump. I mean, Marco Rubio tried in 2016 to give it back to Trump, and it was a disaster for him.
That's right.
But I think what's really hurt DeSantis the most is this battle with Disney. I mean, it seems from a messaging perspective, it's been very muddled, and I don't really know what the point of it is at this point. And it seems as if he's kind of lost the narrative on this. And if you're going to have a fight like that, you better know what the outcome should be. I mean, even the Babylon Bee made a parody about him a couple of weeks ago where they said, Ron DeSantis ends Disney feud when he gets a guest spot in The Mandalorian. You know, I mean, even they're kind of making jokes about it now.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, when you have so much pressure on you and this expectation, and then you're not controlling the message. And if he doesn't announce soon, this is going to further spin out of control. I think he's got to really fish or cut bait, as they say, because he right now is not controlling the narrative. He looks like a guy who is reacting to externalities versus driving the message home. And so if he's not going to run, he needs to say that. If he is going to run, he needs to let people know that he's at least exploring the issue and then start making the case.
Yeah,
because right now it's getting very murky and muddled for him. And of course, by the time this airs, he may be a declared candidate, or he may be out of the race. I don't know.
Right.
But I also think, Lisa, there's another aspect of this, of course, which is all these other candidates who want to run. Chris Christie, the former governor of New Jersey, and they're all trying to find a lane. And Christie was asked about this recently, and he said, there's only one lane, and that's taking on Donald Trump.
Yeah.
But the more people that come in the race that are not Donald Trump, the more it's just going to help Trump, because again, it's going to be very similar to 2016, where you have a stage of people going after him and he's got still his loyal block of people.
That's right.
And they're going to wind up diluting whatever anti-Trump vote is in the Republican Party.
Right.
So they probably have to get together and figure this out. I don't know if they will, though, because I mean, we've worked with enough politicians to know how gigantic their egos are, and to think that any one
you
of them
said it, I thought it.
Somebody else, right?
That's exciting. Mean, I don't think I've laughed this hard. You're so right, though. I mean, honestly, how, you know, that's the counsel of what everybody always says, right? You got to get these guys together. Oh, good luck with that.
Yeah,
I mean, you cannot, there's not a stadium in the country or on the globe that you could put all those egos together and get them all to, anyway.
People say, well, why didn't DeSantis be Trump's VP? Because he doesn't want to be. He thinks he could be president.
That's right.
They all think they could be
president. They do.
Every person who becomes a governor or U.S. senator thinks they could be president. Probably everybody who's a congressman
or a
congresswoman thinks they could become president.
The mayor of my town thinks he could be the president. I mean, exactly. Let's face it. I mean, these are elected officials. And look, I mean, that is what drives them, right? I mean, what drives them is also not only a desire to do good work, but also ego, right? And so that's the big thing. That's the biggest thing in the room. And no one's ego is bigger than the former president's. And by the way, you're right. I mean, no one can out-Trump him. So they're going to have to figure out a way to navigate in a different form and fashion And good luck with that, because I don't think any communication expert on the globe has figured that out yet. So anyway, not to get into politics too much, but I'm always curious about your point of view on that. And I think you're right. It's what I've been saying too. It's an interesting time that we're living in. And I certainly think that, you know, it, look, 2 weeks from now when we air this episode, who knows what's going to happen? It changes so much all the time. So, all right. So when you're not doing 4 hours of radio and when you're not prepping for 4 hours of radio, right. And you are parenting, you know, three young humans and, you know, staying married happily, what's keeping you guys busy on the weekends? What kinds of fun things are you doing up in Philadelphia?
Well, this weekend, since it's going to be a beautiful weekend, I'll be firing up my wood-fired pizza oven.
All right.
Making some pizzas.
What time is dinner? I'll be right there.
We got kids soccer, all the sports, as you know, baseball, soccer, all of it. I've got a little winemaking we're doing this weekend.
Nice.
And we'll try to get the kids out as much as we possibly can in the fresh air. Yeah. But really, I mean, you know, as a parent of two, I mean, it becomes all consuming on the weekends and during the week too. I mean, I'm on the radio. My wife is driving the kids around to practice and baseball games and everything else. It just becomes kind of all consuming. There's nothing I like more though this time of year than firing up the fire pit in the backyard and relaxing with a glass of wine after the day is over. We'll put on a movie for the kids in the backyard. We started this during COVID.
Yeah.
We started calling it Movie Under the Stars.
I love it.
White sheet on the fence and made it like a movie screen. And got a projector for $100 and the kids sit outside and we show movies for them. And they love that. So that's kind of our big South Jersey weekend plans, you know?
I love it. I totally love it. I mean, it's honestly, it was the one thing at the end of a busy week, you know, working in the Capitol or whatever, wherever it was Jason and I were, Friday night movie night was our jam because you could sit down, you could get in your PJs, kids are watching a show, we're catching up or just vegetating. And it was excellent because you really need it.
I'm going to make a suggestion for you, my friend. You really need, if you don't already, get a popcorn machine, like a real old school popcorn machine.
Okay.
Because it's nothing better. I mean, forget microwave. You know, this thing, I have it here. If you can see it in the back, bunch of the door shut. But uh-huh. I have one of those old school movie theater popcorn machines.
I love it.
You put the coconut oil in and the popcorn, and it's just so great. You feel like you're back in the movie theater.
I have teenagers now, so I have to keep them out of the refrigerator downstairs. So maybe the popcorn will divert them. That's a great idea. I love it. I love it so much. The thing that I remember and enjoy so much about our friendship, Rich, is that we have always sort of shared a similar point of view on communications and people we work with. At the end of every conversation for the podcast, I always ask for a recommendation on who I should talk to next. So who do you think, who should be a guest on the Friday Reporter next time?
Let's see. Definitely Matt Rooney, who is a radio host on our station on Saturday nights. He's also the guy behind the Save Jersey blog, and he's an attorney in South Jersey. He's got a lot to say. He's a very sharp political guy and a communications guy, too. Alexandra Wilkes, who is the communications director of the NJGOP. She's really talented and bright, and she's very funny, and she's been a guest on my show a few times. Christine Flowers, who used to write for the Daily News and is a radio host in her own right, has a lot to say about the state of the media. And I would be remiss if I did not mention my dear friend, Dawn Stensland, who for years was on TV in Philadelphia on the local Fox station, Fox 29, and is a radio host in her own right on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. She was my co-host for a number of years, has a lot to say about the state of media communications. She was also a communications professor as well. So those are some good guest recommendations for you.
Awesome. I'm going to put them all on my list as recommendations. I'm going to tell them Rich Cioli nominated them. Rich Cioli Show. Afternoons, WPHT 1210. I'm going to put a link in my show notes. I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that my friends that are up there and down here even listening into the podcast, because I think you're doing amazing work, Rich. Thanks again so much for spending time with me.
Thank you, Lisa. It's been a real pleasure. I've enjoyed it so much. Thank you and best of luck, continued success. It's so great to see you again.
And there you have it, another episode of the Friday Reporter podcast in partnership with PR Daily and coming soon to a platform near you on Big Wig Podcasts. See you next week.